trust that you've had a good week and a good weekend and are ready to study from you from God's Word this morning. Years ago, when I did factory work at High Quaker, Whirlpool, Intercity Products, depending on who owned it at the time, there was always construction work going on. And it never failed. There was somebody that could climb these conduits running up the wall, and it always fascinated me. And you'd watch these guys working for this construction company. They would climb these things and get up to the top, and sometimes they could walk these steel beams across there. Didn't seem to bother them. Well, there's a man named Steve Green that tells about getting to know some of these, what they call riggers, that set up sound stages for concerts and things of this nature. You'll see sometimes these things where they are above stadiums and places like that, where they have these very small poles fastened together in sections, and they climb these things. He said they set up sound and lighting and concert halls all around the country, and they're called riggers. He said he watched them, said they would walk 4-inch beams 100 feet up in the air with nothing below them but concrete floors. He says he's amazed at them in watching them walk. And you can see one of the guys here, his feet, walking on this beam. And sometimes they'll be secured with a safety harness. But sometimes they get brave and they don't wear the safety harness. But he said he was amazed at what seemed to be a lack of fear. That they just get up there and they go about their business. He said he would question them about the ease that they seemed to have as they performed their work. He said one of the fellows I talked with said he wasn't bothered by the sight of looking down 100 feet. I can't even climb a ladder to the roof of the house anymore. He says what I didn't like were the jobs in buildings where they had no sight of what was below them if they were working above the ceiling, like ceiling tiles, lowered ceilings. He said these acoustical tiles were deceptive because they were just a few feet below them when they were walking these rafters. He said, but we knew what was below that, but it would give us a false pretense or false security when we would look down at these things. He said, when we were up there, we still realized that we were high up in the air. And if we slipped, he said, they knew that their weight would smash through the flimsy tile. But their minds seemed to play tricks on them when they were in places like that, lulling them into carelessness. They might take more risk than normal. I say all of this to illustrate a point about how the devil works in our lives. Through trickery, he attempts to lull us into carelessness, thinking that the danger of a spiritual fall is not that significant. It's minimal at best. So it's no wonder that Peter warns us in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8 to be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. So what we're going to talk about this morning is another attitude, the attitude of being sober. The attitude of soberness. So what is soberness? As we've done in the past, we're going to define this. Soberness is defined as this word in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8 from Thayer as being translated nepho. He says it means to be sober, to be calm and collected in spirit, to be temperate, dispassionate, circumspect. Arndt and Gingrich, in their commentary of this, says it means to be sober, be free from every form of mental and spiritual drunkenness. And we all think of soberness and drunkenness as being antonyms, opposites of each other. From excess, passion, rashness, confusion, etc., he says, be well balanced, be self-controlled. The idea is that of being level and clear-headed, not intoxicated with excess, passion, rashness, or anything of the like. So when we take this word and we couple it with the command to be vigilant, it means to be on alert, according to Arnn Gingrich, to be watchful. And Thayer goes on to say that it is defined metaphorically as to watch. In other words, give strict attention to, be cautious and active, to take heed lest through remissiveness, laxity, and indolence, laziness, that we fall into sin. The idea here is that being aware of the dangers around us, we intently watch with great attention so that we're not taken unaware. To recognize and defend ourselves against the spiritual maneuvers and assaults of the devil. So the devil, there's our adversary. What do we know about him? Well, in Peter's admonition here, he warns us about the devil's intentions. Remember, he says in verse 8 to be sober, be vigilant. Because the devil is out there as our adversary. And he's walking around like a roaring lion. He's on the prowl, seeking whom he may devour, consume. The devil's only desire is to destroy us. And for this reason, he is vividly described by Peter as our adversary. He is the Christian's opponent. He is the Christian's enemy. He is the one who is like a roaring lion looking to devour his prey. And guess what? You're it. We are his prey. What we have to realize is that there is no other foe that we face that produces such a threat in our lives. There's nothing else that's so shrewd. There's nothing else so powerful, and there's nothing else so evil as the devil. And probably the main reason that Peter talks about here is that people are so readily willing to let down their guard or never put it up in the first place. Is it that they underestimate who the devil is? What his intentions are? Well, he can't be that bad. Maybe we have the concept or the mentality or the idea that what we see in the Bugs Bunny cartoons, or some of you may not remember Bugs Bunny, but in those Bugs Bunnies, the little devil that sits on the side with the pointed tail and the pitchfork, that may be the concept that we have of the devil, but he's much worse than that. We need to be very aware of the devil, that he is an evil spiritual being who rules over the demonic realm. Jesus tells us in Matthew 12, beginning in verse 24, "Now when the Pharisees heard it, they said, this fellow does not cast out demons except by Beelzebub, the ruler of the demons." That's their accusation against Jesus. It says, "But Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. And every city or house divided against itself will not stand. If Satan cast out Satan, he is divided against himself. How then will his kingdom stand?" So he's telling them, I'm not the devil. But there is a devil. And we need to be aware of him. Paul writes in Ephesians 6 in verses 11 and 12, how we defend ourselves against the devil. He says, "Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil, his tricks, his deceitfulness. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." I wonder sometimes when the Bible talks about the devil and this whole armor of God and why we are to wear it, if people just kind of flippantly read it, that it doesn't mean much to them because they say they can't see God and they can't see the devil. So they're not worried about it. And that may be why people don't put up their guard. That may be why so many of us underestimate who this devil is and what he can do. Not only does he rule in unseen places, but he also effectively subdues and rules over the majority of people in this world. The majority of people in this world have made themselves subject to the devil. And that sounds harsh, but it is true. You see, Jesus tells us in Matthew 7, verses 13 and 14, that we've got a choice to make in our lives. He says, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it. If we follow this wide gate and this broad way, then we're following a way that leads to destruction. That's where the devil reigns. That's where he's at. And Jesus said the other choice is the narrow gate. And it's difficult. The way is difficult, which leads to life, and there are few that find it. A lot of people don't want to work to find what Christ offers. A lot of us are just contented to just go along with the flow. My mama used to ask me when I was hanging around people from high school, if they were jumping off a cliff, would you jump with them? Well, in essence, that's what we're doing when we choose not to follow Christ and we're just going with the flow. Because you see, the majority of the people are going to be lost. They're following the way that leads to destruction. John writes in 1 John 5 and verse 19, we know that we are of God, and the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. You see, there is a difference in the way that we follow, the path that we follow in our life. And we know that we're of God. He says, but the whole world, that is the majority of people in this world, are under the convincing power of the wicked one. Look around us. Look around us. And they don't call sin, sin anymore. They don't call Bible things by Bible names anymore. Paul wrote in Ephesians 2, verses 1 through 3, and you he made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, among whom also we all once conducted ourselves in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as the others. Look at what he's saying here. When you think about what Paul is saying here, we all conducted ourselves in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of our flesh and of the mind. Things that make us happy is what the devil wants us to believe is okay. There may be things in your life that make you happy that are sinful. And if you're participating in those things, you need to understand that you are under the power, the sway of the devil. And somewhere along the line, you've let your guard down. Brethren, we need to keep our dukes up, as they used to say. We need to be ready for anything that the devil throws at us. These passages that we've looked at, Matthew 7, 1 John 5, and this one, Ephesians 2, demonstrate to us that the devil possesses great power. Power that is beyond our comprehension. And such a realization should help us to understand that we are in need to constantly be on guard and watchful for his aggressions. But you see, this is the tragedy. The devil's assaults are often difficult for us to detect. Do you realize that? You know, he's not going to come up to the door out here and go, here's the devil. I'm here to get you. Because we're going to say, no, you can't have me. He's not going to beat the door down and say, I'm here for you. He's going to come in as your friend. He's going to come in as your family member. He's going to come in as your neighbor. And he's going to begin to subtly talk to you, just easy. Maybe it's a coworker. And they're going to convince you that whatever, You don't need to assemble. You don't need to worship God. You don't need to do this. Whatever the case may be, whatever it is that you may already be having problems with, that's going to be the devil's assault. And because you've already let your guard down on that, it's going to be easier for him to take you. His assaults are often difficult to detect because we've lowered our guard. We're not as careful as we used to be when we first obeyed the gospel. We've relaxed ourselves. And this is because the devil by nature is extremely cunning and crafty. Paul warned about this in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. From the beginning, the devil has had schemes and deceptions to accomplish his desires without laying a hand on us. The Russians, way back when, used to say that they would conquer America with socialism without ever firing a shot. That all they would have to do is come in and corrupt some people. Corrupt a few people, and eventually you would be like Russia. That's all the devil's got to do, is just a little bit at a time to where he's corrupted us completely. He brings about our destruction by luring us into transgression God's commands, by violating God's laws. And the problem is, he knows full well what the penalty for sin is. Romans 6 and verse 23. That is death. You know, it was this very tactic that Jesus referenced when he talked to the Jews in John 8 and verse 44. He said, "You are of your father the devil. And the desires of your father you want to do. You want to do what the devil tells you to do," he says. He was a murderer from the beginning. And does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources. For he is a liar and the father of it. Jesus knew the devil. He knew what kind of trickery that he had, what kind of trickery that he was. Through deception and enticement, he murdered Adam and Eve. And you think, well, now they live. But spiritually, he murdered them. Because he had them run out of the Garden of Eden because of their sin. Because he tricked Eve into partaking of the fruit. Tricking them into disobeying God's command. Hey, remember, Eve told him, says, God said, when we eat of this fruit, we'll surely die. And the devil turned one word. You will not surely die. But you'll be like him. You'll have wisdom and all of this other. You can be like God. Isn't that been the desire, a desire of man's for all of history? And in the same way that he tricked Adam and Eve, he effectively works in the lives of every man and woman in this world today. And it's for this reason that we're exhorted, like Ephesians 6 and verse 11, put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. That we read in passages like 2 Corinthians 2, beginning in verse 10, "Now, whom you forgive anything, I also forgive. For if indeed I have forgiven anything, I have forgiven that one for your sakes in the presence of Christ, lest Satan should take advantage of us. For we are not ignorant of his devices, but we are if we've let our guard down." So what, when we talk about these wiles of the devil, what do they include? What do the wiles of the devil include? I want to suggest to you they include everything from enticing us with our own desires, like James 1 and verse 14 talks about, to persecutions for doing what's right. You may be persecuted, not with death or the threat of physical abuse, but somebody may make fun of you because of your stand for the truth. When I first started going to Cook's, I'd go in on Monday and they'd say, "Well, did you watch that ball game last night?" "No, I was at church last night." "You were where?" "You did what?" Sometimes people will belittle you for standing for the truth. Matthew chapter 5, Jesus in his Sermon on the Mount there, giving the Beatitudes, tells us that we're going to be persecuted from time to time. But Revelation 2 and verse 10 tells us to be faithful unto death. It could be personal tragedy, loss, and sorrow in our lives that the devil might use as one of his wiles to defeat us. Look at the book of Job. Isn't that what the devil used when he talked to God? He says, I want Job and I can't get to him because you've built a hedge around him. And God says, you can do anything to him but take his life. And the devil went at him twice. Took everything that he had except for his wife and his friends, and they wound up not being very helpful. But he lost his children, his family, his wealth, his health. Job is a classic example of personal tragedy, loss, and sorrow. But it could be that he uses simple pleasures in life. He doesn't take things and people away from us, but he may entice us with just simple pleasures that, you know, within themselves, they're not sinful. It could be a lack of love and comfort that we might have or should have for the brethren. It's what Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 6 through 11. And it could be a whole multitude of other unimaginable schemes that he has that we may not even think about. But what we've got to do is realize that nothing is beneath the devil. Nothing. He will do whatever it takes to take you away from God. He'll use anything and do anything to bring about our ruin. This devil is utterly merciless. He doesn't care if he turns you against your family, if he turns you against your spouse, if he turns you against every other Christian here. He doesn't care. And this has earned him the title of the evil one or the wicked one. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 13. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 16. So when we talk about this attitude of soberness, we already know what our adversary is. We know what soberness means. But what is our responsibility in all of this? Jeff, you've already said that we've got to be aware. We've got to keep our guard up. Don't let our guard down. You're right. It should already be apparent, shouldn't it? Should already be obvious what we've got to do. But we've got to recognize that we have a responsibility, first of all, to guard against the devil. We can't just walk around like everything is a bed full of roses. Because you know what? Even roses have thorns, don't they? But there is personal duty that when you look at the word vigilant that Peter uses in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, personal duty is inherent in that word. And what it means there is to be on alert, to be watchful. You know, that's not a recommendation. That is a must. We must be alert. We must be watchful. What would happen if a soldier's having watch duty? I heard a story one time years ago about a man standing guard on an American base. He was guarding a gate that really didn't need anybody to guard it. But that was his assignment. You guard this gate. This is the password, and this is the word they respond with. Well, this car come driving up, had flags on the front of it. This man gets out with his pearl handle revolvers on his hip. He walks up, said, I'm going through that gate. Private says, no, you're not. No, you're not. The general says, yes, I am. He said, okay, well, what's the password? Well, I don't know what the password today is. Well, you're not going through. General Patton commended that man because he was watching at a place where you might think nothing's going to happen. And here a general comes up and he says, I'm going through. No, you're not. The devil works at us like that. When we may think that we're in our safest place or where there's nothing going to bother us, the devil shows up. And I'm not saying Patton was the devil, okay? Although some that served under him may have thought that, if you've ever watched the movie. But as a soldier is in conflict, our life is in their hands a lot of times. When I'm a soldier, when we're soldiers and we all are spiritual soldiers, our life is in our own hands. It's our obligation to protect ourselves, James 4 and verse 7. Our very survival depends on us being diligent. Now, consider the aspect of brotherly accountability. You look at passages like Jude 22 and 23, James 5, 19 and 20, Hebrews 12, 15 and 16, and they talk about this brotherly accountability. Paul wrote to the Galatian brethren in chapter 6, and he says, beginning in verse 1, "Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." What's he talking about? Watch out for each other. Watch out for each other. And these passages that we've just mentioned, they leave no room for debate. Part of my responsibility in this soberness is to watch out for you as individuals. And part of this job and your being alert and being watchful is to watch out for me and everyone else that's here. We are to watch for one another, just like the soldier on a battlefield. And there are times when others don't see the danger that they may be in. They don't see any mistakes that they're making in their life. They don't see the weaknesses that are on display in their life. But God, love, and honor demand that we warn and help them. And sometimes we aren't very sensitive to those around us. We don't see the danger that they are in or our responsibility to help them sometimes. Why is that? Maybe it's because we've let our guard down. Maybe it's because we've become relaxed in our service to God and have forgotten just how evil the devil is. And it's for this reason, I believe, that God in His wisdom has designed that there be shepherds in each congregation to watch over and protect its members. Hebrews 13, 1 Peter 5. And this involves not only feeding and caring for others, as we read about in Acts 20 and verse 28, but being watchful. That's their job. That's what they're told in Acts 20, but it's our job as well. Being able to recognize the wiles of the devil and his attacks in individual lives and in the congregation as a whole. But when these attacks occur, they have got to be met. They've got to be able, these men that are serving as elders, have got to be able to both identify and address these problems. Titus 1 and verse 9. And this is why they are required, according to what Paul wrote to young preacher Timothy in 1 Timothy 3 and his requirements for elders, to be mature, to be temperate, and sober-minded. There's our word, sober. Being an elder is an enormous task with great responsibility. So we, as members here at Eastside, with our elders, should hold them in high esteem for their work's sake. That's what Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 5 in verse 13. And those who serve well are to be counted as worthy of double honor. 1 Timothy 5 in verse 17. But we are all to do our part to help make their job less stressful. Hebrews 13 verse 17. Last thing I want to talk about in the time left is grace and mercy. As we battle the devil, we're oftentimes going to fail. But we have to realize that God is not a passive bystander. He actively supports us. You write these passages down. We're not going to take the time to read over them. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 3. Hebrews 2 verse 14 through 18. in Hebrews 4, verses 14 through 16, and there's other scriptures. But I want to suggest to you that God understands who we are. He understands. The psalmist says in 103 and verse 14, "For he knows our frame. He remembers that we are dust. He created us. He remembers what we're made up of." But he doesn't excuse us. He doesn't allow us to make excuses for when we give in to the devil. He doesn't stand by and wink or overlook our sins. He condemns them. And however, he becoming flesh, he sympathizes with our weaknesses. And he pities us as we struggle against the devil. He's offered us the whole armor of God, and we need to use it. And he invites us to come before his throne to obtain grace in our times of need. And with this, we're sure that he's going to support us. And he'll help us to stand. And he will guard us. And he will provide a way of escape. And he will deliver us if we truly honor and fear him. Psalm 34 and verse 7. You see, the more we live and the more we study the Word of God, I hope and I pray the more evident it becomes that Satan is real. And he's actively seeking to destroy us. And you know, it's not just on Sundays or at, you know, random times. He's constantly, daily, trying to engage us in battle. Struggling to do the right thing. But this is nothing less than the assaults from our adversary, the devil. To stand, we have to be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. But with all this, we've got to possess the right attitude. We must poise ourselves with the proper mind. We cannot expect victory if we underestimate the devil and view his attacks lightly. You see, we've got to understand the danger that surrounds us. Be sober. Be vigilant. You know, I'm on Facebook and I read where these people talk about, as men, watch out for women and children when you go places like Walmart. I get it. I do. With having grandchildren like I got, the last thing I want to get is a phone call that one of mine has gone missing because their parents allowed them to put the grocery cart up. The next thing you know, they're gone. The most recent story is the FedEx guy, I believe it was, that kidnapped a child and killed her in the back of his truck. You never know. You never know when something is going to happen. You never know when the devil is going to attack. You never do. But you see, the problem is we don't know what kind of attack it's going to be. He, like I say, he's not going to come and beat on the door and say, "I'm here for you." He's going to be sneaky about it. And he's going to do things that are going to make it easy for you to do what he says. There are ways that we can help strengthen ourselves. We've talked about studying the Word of God. One of those things in studying the Word of God is understanding that we need to become Christians, to put Christ on in baptism. And you can do that this morning. But it may be that you've done that and you're sitting here this morning, you're thinking, you know, I've given in to the wiles of the devil. I've given in to the personal things that he's put before me. I've given in to the persecution. I've given in to this or I've given in to that. This is an opportunity for you to strengthen yourself in the Lord by coming forward and confessing any sin that may be in your life. This is your opportunity. That may not apply to you, either one of them. But you understand that you're faced with the devil all the time. And it would help you tremendously to be prayed for by the saints here at Eastside. To help you overcome these wiles, these temptations, these troubles. So if you find yourself in need of responding to the invitation this morning, I encourage you to make your way to the front while together we stand.